For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter. And if you value our work and want to help, please subscribe to it and to these videos, and also make a monthly pledge of $5, $10, or $20. Or some kronor, since this week we also greet viewers in Sweden who've made it number 6 on our all-time list of views by jurisdiction. That list was, of course, compiled last year, so feel free to try to get wherever you're watching up in the rankings for 2026. And now for a list compiled last week, because in this edition, we start a new series, The Green Money Machine.
The Green Money Machine.
The purpose of this series is to answer that irritating alarmist claim that we climate skeptics have all the money and that we have it because we're well-paid liars for big oil. And we kick off with number 25 on our list of these green giants, the Conservation Law Foundation based in Boston, Massachusetts, whose vision statement includes, quote, "The science is clear. If we don't drastically cut carbon pollution, we put our health, wallets, and future on the line," end quote. Wallets, you say? Because the CLF's 2023 to 2024 Form 990 tax filing shows that theirs gets annual revenue of almost $41.6 million, and it covers a lot of lavish executive salaries. So, help us push back against this financial juggernaut. Then in the newsletter, we move on to the latest climate alarmist nervous breakdown, which is over the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency rescinding the tendentious 2009 endangerment finding that declared CO2 a direct threat to human health. On this, the New York Times Climate Forward set the appropriate tone of solemn hysteria with, quote, "The Trump administration on Thursday erased the scientific finding that requires the government to regulate the pollution that is dangerously heating the planet," end quote. And meanwhile, that newsletter's parent publication, The Times, wrote the patent falsehood, quote, "Trump administration erases the government's power to fight climate change," end quote. Bosh! The American government can do all kinds of things to fight climate change if it really thinks that the weather can be frozen in place and that it should be under 2026 conditions or 1926 or whenever it was allegedly just right. But it can only do so if Congress authorizes it, instead of overzealous bureaucrats bestowing novel legal authority on themselves. As a matter of fact, the finding wasn't even scientific, it was bureaucratic. And now it's been rescinded, bureaucratically. So, if liberals are horrified at how much discretionary power the executive branch has in the United States, and if they were more given to self-examination, they might reflect on who it was that spent over a century, not just since the New Deal, but since the late 19th century progressive movement, trying to increase executive branch power and discretion on the theory that it would take the politics out of government and ensure that everything was always left-wing, also known as expert say. So, they messed up the Constitution, and they messed up the science, and now they're bitter? Oh, and forgive us at CDN for being fixated on Canada's climate follies just because we all happen to live here. But they are revealing, including the U-turn on electric vehicles that we mentioned last week, where the government yanked the steering wheel so hard that they did a 360, from banning gasoline vehicles by law to effectively banning them by regulation. Raising the question whether they actually know what they're doing, and if they do, whether they regard themselves as commendably devious or just way smarter than everyone else. If it's the latter, they shouldn't. As Randall Denley just warned in the National Post, quote, "The Carney plan relies on electric vehicles, EVs, that Ontario plants don't produce, a sudden and dramatic new appetite for buying EVs, and an imagined export market that doesn't exist," end quote. And who would trust them on climate policy now anyway, since a Globe and Mail news story blurted out that, quote, "A new study published Friday by the Canadian Climate Institute says Canada is not on track to meet any of its climate targets, not the 2026 interim emissions reduction target, the 2030 Paris Agreement commitment, or even the long-term goal of reaching net zero emissions by 2050, end quote. Oh, pretty hard to make that one sound like an achievement, isn't it? As it's pretty hard to sound as if the people who pulled that one off should be trusted with the next one. And indeed, in the newsletter we also ask, have they no shame? In this case, because the winter of 2025 to 26 has made a frozen mess of climate predictions of disappearing winter, the end of snow, blah, blah, blah. And yet, the Daily Mail chirps and MSN rechirps, quote, "You think this is bad? British winters will get even wetter thanks to climate change, scientists warn," end quote. Try to follow us here, media dudes. Based on their record, what scientists warn about winter, and especially what they warn about winter thanks to climate change, isn't worth a bucket of slush. Ah, in the newsletter we also note that Tom Harris of the International Climate Science Coalition Canada has a piece in The American Thinker warning that Environment and Climate Change Canada data are fundamentally corrupted in ways that call into question any warming at all over this large landmass in the last 60 to 70 years. The issue, which was discovered by Dr. Joseph Hickey, is that, quote, "In 1998, the exact year in which 72 Canadian reference climatological stations were first added to the Global Climate Observing System, a sudden stepwise increase of approximately 1 degree Celsius occurred at most stations across the country," end quote. And, Harris stresses, "Such sudden discontinuities in data sets, not just climate data sets, but any sort of data sets, are almost always a red flag for a measurement artifact, not a real change." But, as Harris then notes pointedly, he was published in an American outlet because, quote, "Most of Canada's press are heavily subsidized by the federal and provincial governments, which would probably not appreciate the story being covered," end quote. Sadly, that's true, but surely it's a big deal if the data are corrupted. And an even bigger deal if neither the authorities nor the press they've increasingly bought gives a hoot that the data has been corrupted. In the newsletter, we also return to lessons to be drawn from the recent near buckling of the US energy grid under the stress of the winter, rumors of whose demise had been greatly exaggerated. Because, on Real Clear Wire, Terry L. Headley wrote words of simultaneous praise and caution, both of which are worth noting. Quote, "The modern American electric grid has become adept at avoiding disaster. Operators have more tools than ever. Demand response, emergency imports, market signaling, conservation messaging, and sophisticated forecasting. What they do not have, at least not in sufficient quantity, is inexpensive, fuel-secure generation that can run whenever it is needed, regardless of weather," end quote. He then points out that even natural gas, which has many virtues, including generation on demand, does tend to have price spikes just when it's most needed because natural gas plants don't stockpile the stuff, unlike coal plants, which typically have months of supply on hand and so just keep on generating, particularly when you most need it. And another thing, a key alarmist premise is that recent changes in temperature are unprecedented, thus proving that we broke nature, so we own it, and we must make good. But how do they know? How do they think they know? Before the modern thermometer era, we only have proxy data on past temperature, and those proxies rarely capture short-term fluctuations. Even those fabled ice cores, and they're very useful for about the last 800,000 years or so in Antarctica and around 130,000 years in Greenland, suffer the key weakness that the air bubbles that encode ancient data take centuries to seal. But real scientists try to work around limitations on data rather than pretending they don't exist. So, there's a new study of so-called Dansgaard-Usher events, which uses fossil pollen records and seems to confirm that, in fact, fast major temperature changes are nothing new, and that means nothing artificial. And when I say fast, I mean like 10 to 16 degrees Celsius in 50 to 200 years, which is way bigger than anything we've seen since pre-industrial times or anything we're about to see, never mind anything we could cause, even if we wanted to. Moreover, these things are not some secret that was only just discovered. All the study really does is extend the investigation from Greenland to the globe and confirms what was already known, which is that claims of modern conditions being unprecedented are as wrong as they are shrill. Then we find ourselves obliged, by irritation if nothing else, to take aim at the ridiculous phrase, "stop climate change." As when MSN tells us that, quote, "If climate change doesn't stop, this will be our world in 2050, end quote, which is a statement of almost paralyzing idiocy. On the micro scale, the particular claim is that if sea levels rise dramatically, the oceans will be a lot higher. But climate change is not a term that necessarily means the seas rise massively. What it actually means, by common convention, is any statistically significant change in weather somewhere over at least 3 decades. And mighty few such things will submerge Washington, D.C. or Quebec City, even if some activist outfit uses AI to draw a picture of a very specific, overwrought vision of how climate might change. But the macro point here isn't that their specific projections are ludicrous, though they are. It's that, as we've said before, and apparently now have to shout, climate has always changed and won't stop. It is not skeptics, but alarmists who are climate deniers, who deny this fundamental reality, including when they babble that governments could make it stop. If you really think that the weather has not changed, on a small scale and a large scale, near your house and far, far away, ever since the invention of rain, then you know nothing and shouldn't say it. Especially because such people also use climate change without specifying the type, direction, or intensity. They're against it and don't know if it's a man or a horse. Years ago, Thomas Sowell asked about politicians promising change in his very aptly titled book, Is Reality Optional? Quote, "Is there anything more mindless than the endless repetition of the word change? Does it make any sense for grown men and women to be either for or against change in the abstract? The word covers everything from Hitler to the Second Coming," end quote. Likewise, being against climate change in the abstract is inane. If you've been having drought that's killing the begonias, and then it rains a bit more, that's actually good. It's also climate change. And who cares if it gets slightly windier in Patagonia over 43 centuries? There are all kinds of climate changes that either don't matter or are benign. And babble about reversing it is even worse. Because remember, climate change is a statistical description of an alteration in the weather. So, an area getting wetter or drier, warmer or colder, windier or less windy, is all climate change. That means that making the Atlantic have more hurricanes, assuming we could and wanted to, or making the UK get less rain, wouldn't reverse climate change, it would just cause more of it. So beware of anyone, especially an activist, who's never tried to think any of this stuff through, because it probably indicates a much larger mental habit of not thinking. Then in the newsletter, the next installment of our deep dive into last summer's U.S. Department of Energy Contrarian Climate Report takes us to another key tenet of the climate movement, which is temperature extremes. Since they couldn't scare people by talking about a slow, gentle warming trend that wasn't even happening, they turned to lurid pictures of scorching heat and wild winter blizzards. But Section 6.3 of that report looks at extreme temperatures, mainly in the United States, and it finds that while hot extremes are going up in some places, cold extremes are moderating, and overall, U.S. temperatures seem to be becoming less extreme, not more. Something the press somehow never gets around to pointing out. Ah, and speaking of governments fudging data and digging in, as we mentioned last week, the Royal Dutch Meteorological Agency, which is what KNMI stands for, has been forced to admit that they artificially scrubbed historical heat waves from their temperature records after a group of analysts with Clintel, the Dutch climate skeptic group, published a report exposing the monkey business. And it's worth going into more detail here, because when we say after, we mean long after. The report by Clintel was published in 2019, and it was published online because mainstream newspapers, pressured by the government, wouldn't touch it. But even after they somehow got their work into a mainstream science journal, Theoretical and Applied Climatology, in 2021, KNMI still blew them off. Now, this story has a happy ending, sort of. Because in 2026, KNMI quietly buckled under social media pressure and adjusted the data somewhat. But reflect on this point. How many times in how many places have outside groups asked legitimate questions about government climate science agencies only to be ignored, insulted, or even censured and ground down? They run out of time, they run out of money, they run out of patience, they go away, and the data doesn't get fixed. Finally, from the CO2science.org archive, Elusine Indica L. Gerton, also known as goosegrass, Indian goosegrass, silver crabgrass, yardgrass, wiregrass, crowfoot grass, and whatever grass, is a weed that thrives in hot places, especially in sites with disturbed soil like farmland. It's related to millet, and its seeds are apparently edible, but its yields are so low that when it appears, farmers are mainly interested in getting rid of it so they can grow something better. Unfortunately, this hardy pest, like something better, benefits from extra CO2. From 1984 to 2006, there were 6 experiments showing a 34% growth boost from an additional 300 parts per million of CO2 in the air, and a 48.5% growth boost from an additional 600 parts per million. So, if Indian goosegrass is not to your taste, you better get rid of it as soon as you can, because once it starts to grow, each mature plant can produce 50,000 seeds. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I know political science from the real stuff.